Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Bruce Dickey Show here today. My name is Bruce Dickey. Appreciate you.
I'm Len Wells.
Tuning in. Oh, you see, this is my show. You talk too early. You're not Len Wells.
I'm sorry. I'll hush.
Yeah, hush till I introduce you. This is a different show, man. You're not co-hosting here. This is an interview show.
Oh, okay. I'm going to hush.
This is an interview show. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for listening this morning. My guest across the way is WFIW newsman and raconteur Len Wells. As we're going to be doing a little bit of we're doing the Tom Brokaw style retrospective today. How's that make sense?
That sounds great. Boy, just to have my name mentioned in the same sentence with him is fabulous.
He went out to Los Angeles. You haven't been out there.
Never been to California. I'd love to go.
That's
sometime.
Where his first big job was.
Is that right?
Yeah. But ladies and gentlemen, please welcome to the show Len Wells. Leonard Sue Wells.
Leonard Sue right here. You notice the studio audience keeps getting smaller and smaller?
No, it doesn't. The two people here, our average size is pretty high. The average number here, the mean size of the audience is not getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah, well, whatever.
The reason that I wanted to
I'm paying you to do this. That's why.
Well, I haven't had you on the show.
It's been a long time
since I had you on the show.
Since they said don't have him on there anymore.
It was while I was still on AM.
That's a long time ago.
It was before we did the FM, and it's probably 3 years ago.
Is that how long we've been together? It's been longer than that.
It's been less than that.
Okay.
Listen, it's almost 2 years.
Yeah.
Almost 2 years. But I haven't had you on the Bruce Dickey Show since probably I've got him in the other room. I'll bet you it was June of 13. So it might be 4 years.
Wow, it's been a long time then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Bruce Dickey.
For skipping out for
thanks for having me on.
The thing is, back then no one was listening to the show because it was
on AM.
Well, not just that. I was not the terrifically popular human being that I am now.
Doesn't have anything to do with me or the signal. Are we still going out on both stations or just one?
Yeah, we're still on both stations right
okay.
now. We're still on both
AM
stations.
AM and FM?
AM
Country
and FM.
Western.
And online at WFIWradio.com.
We even turned up the power back there.
Power's on.
As far as we know.
Streamer's on, apparently.
It was earlier.
It was about 3 hours ago.
So what do you want to talk about, Bruce?
I want to know how you got into the business of the news.
You want to go all the way back to the genesis of this whole thing?
Yeah, you were. What got you in the mind of becoming a journalist?
Actually, a school teacher of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you work for the school paper?
Oh, absolutely. I was the school photographer, school newspaper and yearbook photographer. Yes.
What school?
Carmi Township High School, which is now Carmi White County High School. They changed that after I graduated. They certainly had to make it something bigger, right?
Sure.
No, it was Carmi Township High School. Probably my junior year, I guess, I became the staff photographer for both the newspaper, which was the Bulldog Barks newspaper, and the yearbook. And one of my teachers by the name of Charlene Shields, who was the yearbook advisor, kind of took me under her wing and got me interested in writing, and certainly the photography end of it just fascinated me. So that's how I got started in all this, and I can thank Charlene Shields. She passed away a couple of years ago, just an absolute, delightfully, wonderful, wonderful, brilliant lady.
She teaches you how to type?
She taught me how to type as well. And that is
ladies and gentlemen, if you've never seen Len Wells type, it is a sight to behold.
I don't know about that, but it's just something I learned, and you know, it's a skill.
You're faster than anybody I know. Let's put it that way.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Well, that's just something I've always done since high school. And I were taught on Royal Manual typewriters.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, oh, my gosh, here's an IBM Electric.
See,
that was a big deal.
I had personal typing in high school as well.
Do they not teach keyboarding anymore?
I don't think they have it.
I think you're right.
I don't know that they have it, but I had personal typing, and I got to like 10 or 15 words a minute.
Sure.
And I still passed, which was
good. That's all that counts.
As I was improving or something, I guess. But over the years, you were probably, I bet you're like 100 or 200 or 150.
Over 100, I know.
Well, over 100 words a minute.
Yeah, but that's just something that's come second nature.
Well, it has now because you've been doing it long enough.
I've been doing it for so long.
Okay.
And these electronic keyboards make it a lot easier, too, because you don't have to bang the keys.
You got out of high school and you went to, when did you start in the actual newspaper? When did you start working for Fightin' Billy Seal?
Fightin' Billy Seal, I started working for him, I guess it would have been in like 1968, somewhere in there. And that's a long time ago, isn't it?
Well, it is a retrospective show.
It is retrospective. Anyway, I got out of high school. That was my first job, was at the Mercury Independent Newspaper, Grayville, Illinois, 62844. And they were actually, the newspaper was run at the time by Nolan B., which is Blair, Nolan Blair Seal, and his son, William S. Fighting Billy Seal.
Nolan, the grandpa was still there, huh?
Grandpa was still there, you bet. Yeah.
Okay.
And then his dad would have been W.J.
Did he start the thing?
W.J. did. W.J.
Fighting Billy's.
Third down. You got W.J., Nolan B., Fighting Billy, and then Swamp.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's the lineage there. And I hope I don't have that wrong, but I was in the family long enough. I think I have that correct.
Worked there for how long?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. A couple of years or so. And then I left there and went to bigger and better things.
Did you move from that paper
to another paper?
Well, when did you move to the television? I've always wondered how.
That was after I came back from Mount Carmel.
I was wondering how the jump happened.
That was weird. That was
how
really
the jump
weird.
Happened to go from the newspaper business into the television business, because that's where I think most people around here probably became familiar with.
That's true. But no, I left the Mercury Independent. I left and went to the Daily Republican Register in Mount Carmel. Went to work for the editor there by the name of Phil Tafani, A. Phil Tafani, and his wife. Ann Tafani, they ran the paper there, and I was worked for them. And kind of an odd thing about that was my first taste of radio, believe it or not.
Really?
Is at the Mount Carmel newspaper. Now you say, now how in the world could that possibly be?
Yeah, that makes no sense to me.
The owner of the newspaper was a guy by the name of John Hurlbut, H-U-R-L-B-U-T. John Hurlbut owned and operated the paper. He also owned and operated the Mount Carmel radio station.
Oh, okay.
I never read any news on
which
the
one, the 100.5 or what?
I don't know what it is. It was back then.
They've changed over and over and over again.
It's had several call letters and numbers, and I don't know what it is now even. But anyway, at the time, it was part of my job was to, any news I wrote, I made a copy and put it into a box for the radio station.
Okay.
So I was writing copy for Mr. Hurlbut's radio station, and then the FCC came along and said, you can't dominate a market with having both the newspaper and the radio.
Oh,
so
really?
We had to divest.
I've seen that done, and that's why newspapers in St. Louis never, KLX never bought a newspaper. They had the same kind of the problems.
You can't
with
have a monopoly.
Can't have a
monopoly in the media in a market. Yeah. And that was then that was broken up long ago and far away. So I came back then. After working, I don't know how long I worked at Mount Carmel, a couple of years or so, and came back to the Mercury Independent.
No kidding.
Sure. Came back there. Started there, went to Mount Carmel, came back to Grayville, and worked there.
And this before the whole government part of it, too, right?
Oh, yeah. That was a brief stint. Yeah. But job responsibilities, I would have to call myself at that stage what's called a printer's devil. Familiar with that term?
Not particularly.
A printer's devil is an old-time newspaper term.
It's the guy who puts the print in?
No, it's the guy that does everything.
Really?
Does everything. Dirty work, mainly. I did a lot of darkroom work in terms of when they finally went from letterpress to offset. You have a lot of photography and film that's used in producing the plates to print the paper on, because it becomes an orthographic process rather than a letterpress process. But at the time, they still had letterpress presses for their job printing, for commercial printing.
Sure.
So when I was there, they still had a linotype operator, and then they printed the newspaper on an offset press.
Did you ever yell stop the presses?
Absolutely.
No kidding?
Oh, sure. Yeah, on more than one occasion.
On like a big story coming through?
No, because we were printing the wrong pages. We're screwed up, Swamp. Turn it off. Stop the presses.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm asking.
And there's no presses. There's just one.
Did you ever get the chance to yell, stop the presses?
No. Not that I recall.
So I was asking, I asked Marty the same thing. He said, no.
I'm sure it happens in the big city, the mayor drops dead or something, Yeah. Stop the presses. Mayor Emanuel shot. I don't know. No, I never did have to do that. But I was a printer's
devil.
That's
good.
So I did a lot of commercial printing, both letterpress and offset printing.
Do you remember any stories from that day that from those days that stuck with you before you got into the television world? Any newspaper stories that you remember? Because you're still in the newspaper business now.
Well, that's true.
But only to a smaller extent, certainly.
Yeah, I would have to say there were some pretty big fires in the Grayville area, big fires, and there were some mutual aid fires that we covered, and also, because I was a firefighter at the
time.
But
then you got into television. How'd that happen?
That was an odd situation.
We'll tell how you got into the television business. We'll talk about that odd situation.
A little unusual.
As well as a few of the stories that you covered while in the TV business, because some of these are fantastic stories. I'm talking to Len Wells today on the Bruce Dickey Show. We'll be back after these. Morning, folks. Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM, Fairfield, Illinois. Do appreciate you tuning in this morning. Hadn't had Len Wells on the show, on this particular show, even though you and I have been doing the morning show together for months now, years.
Mm-hmm.
One plus years. Not quite two. Close to two.
Knocking on it.
Even though we haven't done that for a while, hadn't had you on the show here for about 3 years and just kind of trying to give. You've been in this business a long time. And it's always a fun time to think back. How did you move from newspapers full time to television?
It was an odd thing. I had developed a relationship with a good friend of mine, and I met him through a professional fraternity known as Sigma Delta Chi, SDX. Are you familiar with that?
No, sir.
Sigma Delta Chi is a fraternity of professional journalists. And I was a member of that for many years, and I met a guy by the name of David James,
mm-hmm.
also known as David James Longest.
Right.
James David Longest. That's his real name, James David Longest. Anyway, I met him through that and some other folks that were in TV, and Brad Bird was another one. And Brad Bird at the time was working at Channel 14 in Evansville. And he's moved on since to the CBS.
He's still in Evansville, right?
Oh, yes, yeah, he is. Yeah. But neither here nor there. But they encouraged me to, we need Illinois news on Evansville TV. So they encouraged me to string news for them. And the paper there in Grayville said, that's fine. You know, it's extra income for you, because they couldn't pay me a whole lot of money.
Sure.
And so I was.
What stringers do is?
A stringer provides news to another agency.
Right.
And I was providing news, usually, either in a typewritten form, or they gave me a 16-millimeter silent film camera, and I would shoot breaking news.
Usually at a per word or per minute thing on the
video.
In
this case, right? We just had a flat rate for a copy and our flat rate for video.
Okay.
So they gave me a wind-up, believe it or not, wind-up camera, 16-millimeter silent camera.
Okay.
And so I'd shoot pictures of fires and wrecks and stuff like that and literally drive it over to Evansville and give it to them. They'd put it on the air. And that's how I started. And then that kind of morphed into me working with a guy by the name of John Harriman. And that's his real name. And Johnny Mann was his air name. Johnny Mann was a feature reporter on WFIE in Evansville.
Okay.
Johnny Mann. And so turns out that I was giving Johnny Mann all of his feature stories. You know, here's a good one for you, Johnny, you know, and Johnny'd come over and shoot a feature story. You know, they were good stories, and they were human interest stories.
Disco Beulah, something like that.
Exactly. Yeah. Disco Beulah, stuff dealing with the oil industry, stuff like that. You know, what's a roughneck? You know, who makes a living selling mud?
Right.
You know, there's a mud salesman. There are mud salesmen out there. So anyway, these were human interest stories. And Johnny Mann did a lot of those stories. Well, Johnny Mann decided he was going to move on to bigger and better places. So he left, took another job. And the general manager of the TV station at the time, Conrad L. Cagle, called me up one day and said, Len, you've been doing some stringer work for us for a long time. We've seen your film. You shoot pretty good film. You know how to shoot film. Would you like to come over and interview for a job and maybe take Johnny Mann's place as a feature reporter? I said, "You're kidding." And they said, "No, we'd like you to come. Could you come over this afternoon?"
Oh, really?
Yeah, like that day. And I'm up to my elbows in ink.
Yeah, you've got
you know, we've been printing stuff all day
long. Wearing
the
big rubber arm sleeve type of thing.
No, I should have, but yeah. No, I just had ink under my fingernails and, you know, just ink everywhere. So I'm cleaning up as fast as I can, you know, using roller wash to get the ink out from under your fingernails, and go home, clean up, and drive to Evansville. And they hire me that afternoon.
On the spot.
So I had to come back and give notice. You know, hey, I just took this TV job. And
hey, sorry.
And they gave me a car and a camera, a sound camera. And I not only had what's called a CP16. It's a Cinema Products is the brand name, made in California. Film camera with sound. And also I had a Canon Scupic, which is a silent film camera.
I'm assuming that they give, because you were doing.
And tripod.
And a tripod.
I was a one-man band.
Yeah,
I was a one-man band. I did not have a photographer. And this is before they had ENG, which is electronic news gathering, which is videotape.
Sure.
So we still shot everything on film.
Yeah.
And so.
What year is this?
This would have been in 76, 77.
So you just got started.
I just got started in TV, and we still were running film. It was a big day. Everybody shot film.
See, when you had one of the first big story that you had that I remember is the Evansville, University of Evansville.
Exactly.
The plane wreck.
The plane crash.
And I can still see it in my mind's eye. Seeing the snow, I can still see the snowflakes.
Miserable weather.
Miserable snowflakes. I don't recall that it was you in the field, but I'm presuming it was.
I was in the field as part of the team. I had already left for the day.
This is in December of 77.
I'd already left for the day. I'll just be honest with you and just tell it the way it exactly the way it was. I left work and went down to a place called Hagedorn's Tavern. Do you know where that is?
I love Hagedorn's.
Hagedorn's on the west side.
I loved Hagedorn's.
I went down there.
I don't think it's still there anymore, is it?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I thought they closed a few years ago.
It may have. I shouldn't have said that.
Near Sportsman's and all those.
Exactly. They're on, West Franklin?
Yeah, Franklin.
On the corner, and I went down there to have one cold beer before I went home, get a schooner full of beer. Well, I had a pager on, and my pager went off. I thought, oh, geez, I just sat down here. What's the deal? Come on. So I went.
It's an ugly day. I went to somebody.
So I went to a payphone because we didn't have cell phones. That went to a payphone. What's going on, man? You got to get back here right now. The UV plane has crashed, and it wiped out the entire UV basketball team. So I went back to work. You know, it's like whatever time it was.
It would have been dark.
It was dark, and it was pouring down rain, miserable, nasty, horrible weather. And went back to work. And as I recall, I didn't go home till, oh, gosh. I was there like a day and a half. I mean, after that.
Yeah.
Never stopped work. We worked around the clock. And part of my assignment on that it was just dreadful. I went downtown to where they set up a temporary morgue.
Yeah.
And they were bringing back the remains of these poor kids. And that was part of my job, was to film that. And that was also one of the first thing, we had just launched this. It's called Live-I-14.
Yeah, I remember that.
Live-I-14 was a microwave system where they could do live reports from the field.
Right.
And I did the very first live report from the field, introducing one of my feature stories in Posey County, actually.
Okay.
So anyway, that was the first use of that live capability at a major news story, and the competition totally out of the water.
That's what I'm remembering, because I can see it, and
it was live.
I can see it live from the scene, and it may not have been snow. Maybe
it was rain.
It was rain going sideways.
It was horrible weather.
It was unpleasant, and I can see it. Of course, it looked white. In the lights.
Exactly.
It looked white in the lights.
But I can tell you it was torrential rain. It was awful. It was mud, nothing but mud.
So you're in the business for a year and a half at this point. Okay. This isn't getting any. This is horrible.
It was awful. It was dreadful.
Oh,
and then attending the funeral, covering the funerals of the. One of the stories that I covered, which I'll never forget as long as I live, is the funeral of Duff in Kingston down at El Dorado.
Oh, did you go over here?
I covered
for
that funeral because the funeral was in the gymnasium, and they renamed the gym after those two players, as you recall.
Oh, anyway,
that was that changed everything. In television in that market was having that live capability, because everybody else was still shooting film.
Wow.
And you had to bring the film back, you had to get the film processed. There were some early people using videotape. So there's some videotape, but mostly film still.
So as the market was evolving, the equipment is evolving, you're growing with it in the television business. By the early 80s, they're sending you to all over the place.
Sure.
And that gets you to one of your other big stories, the big riot. Tell me about the big riot.
The big riot was, this is one of the things that I feel like I've done very well over the years, and that's develop contacts. I think it's so important in the news business if you have sources and contacts that trust you.
Oh, it's incredibly important.
That trust you, and you trust them. Well, I'd gotten a tip that, let's back up just a little bit. In Galicia, Illinois, which is in Saline County, there was a coal mine. The coal mine's still there, I think, and they may have closed, but there's a coal mine there. It started out as a MAPCO coal mine.
Right.
And it was one of only two non-union coal mines in the whole state of Illinois. And they had just started building it. They had just started working.
It wasn't even.
No. They hadn't even sunk a shaft yet.
Right.
They were just doing the surface work on it. Well, the United Mine Workers of America, of course, they never took credit for any of this. They said, you know, we're not going to have a non-union mine in this state because this is the birthplace of unionism right here in southern Illinois. It ain't going to happen. So I'd gotten a tip that there would be a large presence of protesters, and they'd be coming in from all over. Well, first day, they didn't show up. And so my boss said, yeah, you know, is your source good? I said, it's good. Trust me. He said, I'll give you one more day. Second day, they did not show up. Nobody showed up. So I drive all the way down to Galicia, and I'm sitting in a park somewhere.
Yeah, they're probably
listening to a police scanner.
Your boss is probably kind of expecting some content.
Because
he's got news he's got to fill.
I have wasted 2 days of my work.
Yeah.
And he says, Len, that's it. You know, your source is obviously wrong. I said, it's not wrong. I said, he said, well, you're not going back down there. I said, yes, I am. And anyway, so the next day, the third day, I drive down to Galicia bright and early, park at the up on a hill in a park near Galicia, and my police scanner's on, and I hear this Illinois State Police airplane. They're gathering at this location, and they're gathering at that location, and there looks like about 100 cars here and 100 cars over there, and here they came. And they descended upon the MAPCO mine at Galicia.
Really?
They descended upon it. Now, as far as trying to identify who they were, or, you know, there wasn't any organized group like the United Mine Workers, but it was pro-union people. That's all you could say about that.
Sure.
They came down there, and they didn't just come down there with signs and say, well, we really don't like this. They came down there.
They were stopping it.
They stopped it. They came. First thing they did was see the place had a fence, what they call a hurricane fence, all the way around it.
Right.
A fence with the angle iron on the top of it, you know, and the barbed wire on top of that.
Yeah.
They tore all that down. Tore it down piece by piece.
Four, five, 600 people can do that.
With their bare hands. Tore that down.
Okay.
Tore it down. The next thing they did was they entered the perimeter of that property and set fire to the heavy earth moving equipment. Well, now, by this time,
you just can't do that without accelerant.
Well, they did. They did. So the state police, they're seeing all this develop in front of their eyes.
They know about it. Yeah. State police is all they've got the bear in the air, for crying out loud.
I'm there. I enter this property with a camera before any cops get there. Okay?
Yeah.
So I'm kind of in it.
Yeah.
I'm in this.
Yeah.
And it's a riot. It's a full-blown
riot.
They're tearing stuff up. They're burning stuff. And, well, here come the state cops. Well, some of them come in their cars. And then, but the biggest number of them came in by chopper. Your Huey choppers that you would see commonly in the Vietnam War.
Oh, really?
Hueys.
So they were the open doors. Yeah.
They'd land. Half a dozen troopers would get out with their riot sticks and helmets and everything, and it's a full-blown battle. It is a full-blown battle.
Well, but you're in the middle of it.
I am literally in the middle of
this. With the camera.
With a camera, shooting from basically the inside out. Seriously. And then I'm all of a sudden saying, this is not a good day.
maybe not the place you want to be.
And along comes somebody that I'll never forget as long as I live, and he saved my life.
He has been a guest on the show.
He's been a has he?
I think so.
Homer Clark?
No, not Homer. Maybe Homer. Yeah, I think Homer. Yeah.
Homer Clark. State police.
He came on talking about something else.
Homer said, "You're on the next chopper out of here," and I said, "But," he said, "You're on the next chopper out of here." I said, and he said, "You don't understand. This is not safe for you to be here." So the next chopper came in. Troopers get off, and Homer put me on that chopper. And now there was another photographer, and she was from the Evansville Courier, and she and I got evacuated from that place. And as God is my witness, as we are lifting off, these demonstrators, they took those angle irons off the top of that fence that carries the barbed wire. They had taken those and they were throwing them up through the blades of the helicopter as we're taking off.
Oh my!
Bang! Ding! And that was very unpleasant.
You think?
And so we're sitting in this chopper with no doors,
sure,
no seat belts. We're just hanging on for our dear life. And we landed at a nearby school, and that was the end of that. That was the end of my coverage. Well, it wasn't the end of my coverage. I went back to the area, downtown Galicia. They had set fire. They had set fire to the company headquarters, which happened to be next door to the fire station. So what are the firemen are doing? You have to understand, the firemen are part of this group of demonstrators to some degree. They're spraying water on the firehouse. The company building burns to the ground. That's what that was all about.
How'd the pictures turn out?
Wonderful. It was just phenomenal.
I mean, I don't remember. I must have been.
Unfortunately for the Illinois State Police, unfortunately, and I got to tell this story because it's true. One of the pieces of film that I shot was a trooper in full riot gear. This is long ago before. That training has changed a lot since then.
Oh, I'm sure.
Trust me. They chase this guy down who's, throwing firebombs and stuff. Chase him down and whack him big time in the whack him as he's running, knock him down with a nightstick, and he just rolls. I mean, it was almost comical. But that piece of film got picked up, and it went nationwide on all the networks. And then WGN Chicago used that little snippet of video in their opening video of their news every night. Weeks and weeks and weeks. You know how you show, here's a fire, here's a bad wreck. And
WGN News.
Here's a trooper. Waggity, waggity, whack, whack, whack. And the state police said, would you please take that off? It puts us in a terrible light, which it did. I mean, but it's just what it was. It's just what it was. It was not my intention to put anybody in a bad light. It's just what was going on.
Hey, and your job's get pictures.
Exactly.
You're the observer.
I felt bad about it afterwards that it went, as we would say today, went viral. We didn't know what that meant.
Wow.
Back then.
We got story time here with Len Wells. Kind of a retrospective here on the Bruce Dickey Show. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Bruce Dickey Show on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield. Back after these.
I was just 34 years old, and I was still wandering in a haze. I was wondering why everyone I met seemed like they were lost in a maze. I don't know why I thought I should have some kind of divine right to the blues. It's sympathy, not tears, people need when they're the front page sad news. The incense burned away, and the stench began to rise. Lovers now estranged, avoided catching each other's eyes. Girls who lost their children, cursed the men who fit the coil. And men not fit for marriage, took their refuge in the oil. No one respects the flame.
Morning, folks.
By the way, thank you for playing. That's one of my favorite songs in the whole wide world.
Well, you're very welcome.
I love that song.
You're very welcome. That's Pete Townsend's Slit Skirts,
folks. That's Walt's nephew, isn't it?
I believe so. Yeah, they're related.
Well, he admits it now. He has taken...
He did take ownership
of that young man.
Welcome back to the Bruce Dickey Show here on AM 1390 and WFIW-FM Fairfield, Illinois. Doing a little bit of a 49-year retrospective for Len Wells.
How many years is that?
49-year retrospective.
I've lost my place.
But he's not going anywhere. He's going to he's not going anywhere. So just for that. So over the course of the time, you were in television for 13 years. Why'd you get out of TV?
I got fired.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, just that simple.
What'd you do?
I didn't do anything. They took a different direction. The general manager at the time, based upon a company called Audience Research and Development out of Dallas, Texas, gave them the advice that they needed bigger market experience in their department heads, and that was specifically in the news department. I had no bigger market experience.
No.
I came from the grassroots up.
Yeah.
I came from newspaper into television and worked my way up to the news director's position. And based upon this advice from the Audience Research and Development Corporation, they needed bigger market experience.
How long did that last, by the way, after they brought in new people?
How long did it last?
Yeah, the new people.
Didn't last very long either.
I was going to say, no. I didn't think they probably did. No. I mean, that's one of the things.
They hired a guy that came in from, I'm wanting to say, up in Michigan somewhere. Brought a guy, and he had bigger market. Michigan, you know, Detroit's a bigger market, you know, and bigger than Evansville. Evansville's like the 87th market, something like that.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's what
it
was.
But it seems like if you're bringing in people who've been in big markets already, it makes no sense to try to bring those to a small market because they ain't going to want to stay in a small market.
And they don't, typically. So, yeah. But anyway, I was too much grassroots, they said. Too much grassroots management.
So you get into radio then and
so what happens to the general manager? They can him eventually, too.
Well,
yeah, he was, you know, he didn't have very big market experience either.
Well, yeah.
Actually, he did come from Louisville, Kentucky, but on a much lower level. But I don't want to get into
Louisville's probably, what, a 20 market. Or 30 bigger markets than Evansville, like that.
It's a nice market.
Nice market. Yeah, we'll get out of that. Tell me a little bit then, in radio, one of the shocking things, I don't know anybody except you who has actually been to an execution.
That would be me.
Tell me a little bit about how that came about.
I just got a letter one day from the Illinois Department of Corrections. It says, it was very, and we don't get letters anymore, you know, you get emails and stuff, but it was a letter. And it says, do you want to be an official witness at an execution of a guy by the name of John Wayne Gacy?
How did you get on their letter list?
I was a news director.
Okay.
Here at the radio station.
Okay.
So I just, what the heck, you know, hey, what the heck? And I signed yes and sent it back. And basically all that did was put me in a lottery, okay?
Yeah.
So in the lottery, they drew my name.
Right.
And called me back, says, you've been chosen.
Yeah.
Here's where you need to be and when.
Wonder how many people were in the lottery. Because you were like one of three official witnesses.
Well, no, I was one of, I think, three official news
witnesses.
Or media
you're
witnesses.
You're the pool.
Pool. Correct. And then there were official witnesses, which were like detectives and family members of the victims.
Well, John Wayne Gacy ends up
being infamous.
A bigger name than pretty much anybody that's ever been put to death in Illinois
in
the last
certainly.
50 years.
Unless it'd be Richard Speck, and he didn't get put to death. He just died in prison.
Yeah.
But, John Wayne Gacy's execution, my name got drawn. That's the only lottery I've ever won, by the way. So I drive up to Stateville, you know, the Joliet prison or whatever it's called out there, and I get there, and here's all these demonstrators, and there's all these reporters out there and everything, and they wave me right on through because I'm, you know, here's my credentials. And they take me in, so all of a sudden I'm inside looking out.
Yeah.
And that was an odd feeling, very odd feeling.
Had you ever visited, you'd probably visited prisoners before as part of your, part of your job sometimes.
Yeah, I'd been to Menard down south, but I'd never been up to that joint ever.
Is that one still being used?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I didn't know if that one had been. They've renovated it because it's
they've
like
renovated
150
it, but I think
years
they,
old. Right?
I think they closed the joint that I went to. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And but anyway, I get up there, and of course, it was delayed, as you might expect, because of last minute appeals to the Illinois Supreme Court and the U.S. Supreme Court. And so we're getting all these updates. You know, it's going to be delayed an hour. It's going to be delayed an hour. Anyway, so the scheduled time, and I'm sorry I can't remember when the scheduled time was. We'll say 10 p.m. It may have been earlier than that. And just, you know, it goes on and on and on. Now, where we are now, as we're awaiting the hour of the death, is in the chapel. We're in the chapel of the prison. This is where the holding area is for the witnesses.
Right.
And so we're just sitting there when they're coming. Yeah, well,
somebody probably representing victims' families and all that kind of
thing. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Because there were a lot of victims.
There was a certain number of victims, family members, investigators, and prosecutors and stuff like that, and the media witnesses, of which I was one. And so finally, they say, okay, all the appeals are done. It is the hour. And so we leave the chapel, which is just so weird because it's now in the middle of the night, in my opinion. It's after midnight,
yeah.
Okay? And we're walking down this long sidewalk. And to my left are these circular, these round buildings housing inmates.
Uh-huh.
And there's windows open and stuff. And so these inmates are hollering. They're seeing us walking toward, yeah, everybody knows Gacy's going to get juiced, right?
Yeah.
So they're hollering, Gacy's going to die twice tonight. Gacy's going to die twice. You know, and I'm kind of freaking out. My eyes are big as saucers, hoping these guys don't get out of their cells,
oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So anyway, we walk down this long walkway, and we enter the death chamber, which is a building. It's actually a room within a building, certainly.
Right.
And, you know, my first impression of that place, you're going to think I'm just absolutely weird.
WFIW Studios.
No. You know what a baptistry looks like in a church?
Uh-huh.
Okay, you're sitting in a church.
Yeah.
And then behind the pulpit.
Behind the pulpit, the small little room.
There's a little room, but it's glass. It's got glass in front.
And they open the curtain.
And there's a baptistry in there. That's the first thing that went through my mind. Isn't that so weird?
That's weird.
Because, that, you know, we're sitting there.
But I mean, if that's what you look, if that's what you have in your mind.
That's what I see. Because there's curtains. Curtains closed. Okay, curtains are closed. And we're sitting in there, and everybody's just dead silent.
Yeah.
And a female prison guard comes out and tells us all the doors are locked. Don't even think about leaving. This is it. Don't even ask to leave. And there's armed guards. That there's like two exit doors. There's armed guards, shotguns.
Yeah.
Don't move.
You ain't going anyplace.
I was on the second row. I wasn't in right at the window, but I was in the second row. They open the curtains, and there's Gacy laying there on a gurney. He's looking at us. You know, he can't really see us because there's no lights. The lights are down where we are. We're in the dark,
and
it's all bright in there. And there's a guy there, and they lower a microphone. And do you have anything to say, Mr. Gacy? Okay? These are his last words. Do you want to know his real last words? And I think I can say this without getting put off the air.
Okay.
But the reported words from the Illinois Department of Corrections is, whatever you do to me will not bring back a single victim. Okay?
Right.
But his real words were, because I was sitting there, says, you tell all those cops and news guys out there to kiss my ass.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's exactly what he said.
Why would you change? Well, not you. Why would they? Why would the state?
That was the official statement they put out.
The
I don't
statement.
Know why they did it, but they did.
Okay.
So anyway, the warden gives the order to the Department of Corrections.
Start the process.
You start the process, and that goes on for, I don't know, 30 or 40 seconds, and everybody's like, because his chest is just heaving.
Yeah.
His chest is heaving.
Yeah.
And they close the curtains. He ain't dead. They close the curtains. Lady comes out again and says, there's been a problem with the IV. There's a problem with the IV. We have to reintroduce the IV. And so all of a sudden, it makes sense. Gacy's dying twice tonight. They juiced him and had to restart all over again.
How'd those guys know?
What happened, I believe, and nobody will confirm this to me, I believe after the first juice went in, because there's three, it's a cocktail of three drugs.
Right.
It stopped his circulation. Essentially. And so, no circulation, nothing's going to go in. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I see.
It's what I think happened.
Wrong order.
Well, I don't know. It could have been that.
The one that stopped the circulation probably needs to be last.
Well, one of them's a paralytic, you know, to stop your breathing. And anyway, so they finally open the thing back up, and they rejuice him, and he finally dies. But Gacy died twice that night. So that was one of the most bizarre stories I've ever covered.
That probably is
stories
the most.
That's
got to be the most. I mean, really. Yeah. Boy, you didn't get a chance to meet him, but you've met hundreds of people over the course, hundreds of thousands of people over the course of your career.
Yes.
Give me some famous people.
Famous people? Red Skelton.
Really? Give me a Red Skelton story.
Red Skelton said, I grew up in Vincennes, he said. I grew up in Vincennes. I learned to swim in the Wabash River.
How about that?
And I told him, I said, well, I did too, as a matter of fact. He said, oh, me and my brothers, I tell you, that's where we learned. Mom and dad just threw us in the Wabash, and that's how we learned to swim. And I said, well, that's kind of like we learned to swim, too. He said, yeah, but if we hadn't fought our way out of that grass sack, we wouldn't be here today.
How old was Red Scuttle when you met him?
Oh, gosh. I'm guessing he was in his 60s.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That
he
was
still
back visiting, I guess, or something?
He was, yeah, back in the Vincennes area, and he was doing something at the Executive Inn in Evansville.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. Oh, at Vincennes and Evansville.
See, now, you and part of your job is to meet these folks and put the story on them for the news. Who, like
Phyllis Diller.
Phyllis Diller.
Met Phyllis Diller. She was just an absolute hoot. Absolute hoot. And then I met Helen Hayes, the great actress. Helen Hayes, met her on the Delta Queen steamship.
Really?
Okay, paddle wheeler, you know, stern wheeler. Yeah. Came through Evansville. She happened to be a guest on there along with her son. What's his name?
James MacArthur.
James MacArthur, who played Dano on Hawaii, the original Hawaii Five-0.
So you
they met, were there together.
I bet you that guy. Somebody yells "Book of Dano" every time.
I bet he just gets
ever
sick
walked,
of that.
Well, he's dead now.
Well, he was sick then too.
Yeah. Okay, you got to tell me. Did you yell "Book of Dano" at him?
No, I never said
you
it.
You didn't?
No, because our interview got interrupted.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There was a lot of boats.
Yeah.
There was boats fought little. Pleasure boats following the stern wheeler, you know, hey, big deal, you know, stern wheeler's in town. Well, me and a friend, actually it was my photographer, we look over and this boat is swamped. It's swamping. There's like 9 people on this boat. It's following, and it was on the side there. What in the heck are we going
to
do?
Swamping next to the riverboat.
Next to the riverboat.
That's a bad idea.
So Bradley Dean Hyde and I said, we got to do something. So we, because everybody's, you know, looking at something else, we see these people about to drown over here. So we get life jackets and the rings and everything. We're throwing them out there, trying to get everybody's attention. And we finally, with the ropes and everything else, we finally save these people. And Brad Hyde and I close out this segment here. Brad and I then were called before the mayor of Evansville, Indiana, Mayor Vandeveer, and were given a life-saving award.
How about that?
Still got that at home. Dean Hyde and I saved these lives.
You know, that in a buck will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah. I think it's got a coffee ring on it, too. We'll get you nothing.
Oh, man. That's fascinating.
I've had fun.
Oh.
I got to go dig up some news.
Go get some news. Folks, thanks for listening to the Bruce Dickey Show today. We'll talk to y'all tomorrow. Have a great day.